I would rather have a day job than be a Pokemon master.
Han Solo is clearly more attractive than Indiana Jones.
I would take the Star Wars trilogy over the Matrix trilogy any time.
The Legend of Zelda versus Super Mario. Who's better in bed, Jafar or Gaston? And would Thanos masturbate with the Infinity Gauntlet or not? Every week, Nerd Rage the Great Debates brings you the funniest comics, writers, and podcasters to settle some of geekdom's most divisive topics. Find us on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts.
And welcome to the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Balboni.
And I'm Robert Negoesco.
And today is November 15th, 2022. And today we're going to have a little special episode because we lost another comic great. And Kevin Conroy, passed away this week. It was really hard for us and, well, for the world.
Sure.
Because he was like the definitive Batman for all of us.
Best Batman movie still is Mask of the Phantasm.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I would say.
Yeah. Which
we could have done that too instead of what we have planned for today. We could have just done that movie.
Yeah.
And that's a serious showcase of Kevin Conroy's, you know, vocal range and talents and the emotion and the depth that he would bring to the character. Which is what we're trying to do today, but
yeah,
watch the movie, folks. Definitely.
Yeah, watch that movie. I mean, so he was basically Batman for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Starting in 1992 with Batman the Animated Series. So we picked some of our favorite episodes, some of his favorite episodes, some of the world's favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And we're just going to focus on those, you know, do a synopsis, what we thought of it, what he thought of it. But first, we're kind of going to just start with his life. And basically, I got some of this information from an IGN article by Jesse Sheeting, Wikipedia. Please donate $5 to Wikipedia, by the way. CBR and NPR. So Kevin Conroy.
Before you go any further, I do need to let everyone know, if you do hear weird banging and noises and strange things occurring
going up in the night,
that yes, it could be Batman outside, but it's not. It's someone working on the porch. So I did not know this was going to be happening today. So apologies in advance. It should be okay, but if you happen to hear anything, that's what's going on.
Just pretend it's Batman.
Yeah. Beating up crooks.
So Kevin was born on November 30th, 1955 in Westbury, New York. He moved to New York City in 1973 when he earned a full scholarship to attend the Juilliard School of Drama Division, studying under actor John Houseman. While there, he roomed with Robin Williams, who was in the same group as both Conroy and Kelsey Grammer. So apparently he also hung out with Frasier a bunch. It's cool.
So Popeye, Batman, and the Beast, three superheroes.
Pretty crazy, right? he graduated from the Juilliard drama program and began his acting career in earnest after moving to California in 1980. So I guess he did a lot of theater, a lot of Shakespeare before that as well in New York.
It does make a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. He has that nice booming Shakespearean voice too.
Yeah.
Before launching into voice acting, he made his mark as a stage, film, and television performer. Finding Batman, which debuted... Oh, sorry. That's going into it before... let me skip around here. So Bruce Timm actually said, like, when he did his first voice acting audition, he didn't know anything about Batman, really. He didn't even know that Bruce Wayne's parents had been killed.
Wow.
Yeah. the only reference he had was the 66 Batman series by Adam West. And so, yeah, like he had asked Bruce Tim, he's like, so should this be like the Adam West Batman? And Bruce Tim was like, no, like, not at all. That's not what we're going for.
And sure. I mean,
oh, okay.
In many ways, I mean, this show is what kind of broke that perception of Batman in people's heads, right? Because mm-hmm. even Tim Burton, though it's much darker, he didn't read comics and he had watched Batman 66, and it is in there. And also Tim Burton is way more Batman 66 than anything, right?
Right. Animated series took a lot from Tim
sure.
Burton. He definitely took the music, first of all, the theme song.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took the way he designed Gotham, and that, yeah. you know, it has that like time, or like we don't know what time period it is, right?
Yeah, it seems like there's cell phones, but black and white TVs, and people right. still mostly listen to the radio.
Exactly.
So it's lost in time, which I think, mm-hmm. I mean, really aids Batman, like the fact that he has a big giant black and white computer. It's like a supercomputer, but it's black and white. Like,
yeah, or like when they're driving around in Bruce Wayne's car, which looks like it's from the 40s.
Yeah, it has suicide doors.
Yeah, it has suicide doors, and then but it has a TV in it, right?
Yeah.
and he's on a phone talking to Alfred most of the time, and you're like, "What? Where am I?" But it gives you that fantastical feeling
yeah.
where you never know where you are. So it's just like, yeah, it's like lost in time.
Art Deco.
Art Deco. And so it feels that way in Tim Burton's 89 Batman, and in Batman Returns as well.
Sure.
The animated series feels that way too.
I was only getting at that. It feels more serious than even those live action movies were.
Right.
Which I recently watched them and they're great, but it's like this show has like a gravity and takes the character serious in a way that I don't think had been done, period, in media.
Yeah.
Up until this show. I mean, except mm-hmm. for maybe some comics, and even that, you know, we can debate how serious a lot of these guys take the character.
Right. So in 1992, that's when the animated series came out. And then throughout the years, he brought 60... or brought the hero to life across 60 different projects, including 15 films, 15 animated series, and almost 400 episodes in almost 100 hours of television. And then finally, he also starred in a live action Bruce Wayne in the Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths, a crossover event that took place from 2019 to 2020.
Yeah.
I
was just going to name some of the projects, like, you know, he's Batman in the animated series, but then he shows up in the Superman animated series, mm-hmm. Justice League Unlimited, Batman Beyond. He's voicing older Bruce, who's
right.
basically young Batman's Alfred plus Batman, you know,
right.
so
yeah.
The Arkham games, I believe there's three or
yeah,
maybe
there's three
four.
Of them, I think.
Massive yeah. games, and that was like that introduced Batman to a whole nother generation again, you know, and they were getting it was nostalgic for, you know, people my age and us who had grown up, but it was also like kids who had never watched that stuff
mm-hmm.
did end up watching that stuff because of those games too, I think. And then, like you said, a million other things,
right?
Just so much.
And then most recently, he also finally got to use his knowledge of Batman and finally wrote a comic and which we talked about before in another episode.
Yeah. If you wanted to check that out, we don't talk about it for very long, but we're covering the story and it was our favorite of that issue. The episode of Escapist Comics podcast is called Nature Doesn't Care. And it starts around 21 minutes and 30 seconds into the episode.
Mm-hmm.
We start talking about it, and it's that story is an autobiographical story,
right? And it's called Finding Batman. He just talks about his personal struggles that shaped him on his road to becoming Batman. And being a gay man as well, in Hollywood and at the height of the 80s AIDS crisis.
Yeah. How that really helped him find the voice.
Yep. Yeah. And both of his parents had also died as well. And so he had a lot of crossover to the world of Batman before he even knew it, really. So Conroy passed away on November 10th at the age of 66. Yeah, and it really hit all of us really hard. I know I cried when I found out in the morning. It was one of the first things I saw when I woke up. And it was just really shocking because that series meant so much to me as a kid. I remember watching the first episode with my dad, and I was a huge Batman fan already. I remember going to the 89 Batman. My dad, I think, took me the first week it opened. He bought me like the Batman cereal that came out, like everything. I just wanted everything Batman, like after that. And that series was so close to, you know, the 89 Batman, just the theme song and everything. And then I was just like hooked instantly. And I had to watch it every week. I watched all of the episodes. That was Batman to me.
The show is incredibly important for me personally. Yeah. It was like, I was thinking about it and I never had really, put that together, but I didn't know who Batman was. I didn't know who any superheroes were because the show debuted like 2 weeks before I turned 3 years old. And I was looking back and it's like, I don't think I had seen X-Men yet. Maybe I had watched Ninja Turtles. So it's possible they predate that. And Popeye, who is, I guess, a superhero, but like I'm looking at it and it's like this was my introduction to superheroes, period. Like,
yeah,
the capes, right?
Right.
You know, not mutated turtles or whatever. And it's like, it made me fall in love. I remember that excitement of like, I mean, I couldn't read or anything like that. And just when the intro would play, I don't really remember even watching specific episodes or whatever. I was so young, but I remember seeing that intro multiple times, you know, knowing that it was Batman. I never paid attention. I'd never said it or anything like that, but it was just all like every day or as often as I could watching that, you know. That's before I could even knew about schedules and stuff, but it was just like, I would always look for Batman. And it's like, that guy is the voice in my head. I read the comics. This is who it is, you know?
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people mentioned too, throughout the many articles that I read, is whenever you're reading a comic, you just hear his voice. It's just the natural voice at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of episodes to go through. We just picked a few, or four, or five. I snuck in an extra one because I just had to.
But
I think we're going to start with Beware the Gray Ghost. And this is written by Dennis O'Flaherty and Tom Ruger and directed by Boyd Kirkland.
And they're all on HBO Max for anybody. I mean, the entire DC animated universe is there. So watch Justice League, Batman Beyond, all that stuff.
Yeah, all the movies are entirety. On there. Most of them are. Yeah. Most of the voices too. Yeah.
Reason enough to get HBO Max in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
Access to that whole universe of amazing Bruce, the Tim verse, whatever you want to call it.
The Deanie Bruce.
Yeah.
So this starts off with Simon Trent as the Gray Ghost and the Mad Bomber. So young Bruce Wayne is watching his favorite hero, the Gray Ghost, on a black and white TV, as we talked about earlier.
He's watching a TV show, though you can tell that the creators meant it to be like a movie serial.
Just like the old Batman or Superman TV serial that was on back in like the 40s.
Yeah. Or Zorro, which the real Batman, the kids who made Batman would have been watching.
Right. Yeah, really, it reminds me of like the Superman, the George Reeves Superman or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like The Shadow, I guess, more so than Superman, because it's like a pulp comic, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I talk about here how, again, we talk about that time period. You have no idea where they are, what time period is. But yeah, it looks like they're using like old film reels. So yeah, this episode is the Mad Bomber. There's like a note: pay up or pay the consequences. $1 million in cash or the Gotham Bank is next. The Mad Bomber.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go back to present day after Bruce has been watching this, and they find that same note. And there's a big bomb explosion. Commissioner Gordon is there with Batman. They find the same note. Batman hasn't quite connected this yet until he goes home and he goes to bed and he starts having like a nightmare, and he wakes up in sweats and he's like, oh, the Gray Ghost. And it's that.
Yeah. It's a nice cut back and forth between the modern day mm-hmm. and how they animate it and stuff. It's mirroring each other, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool sort of thing. You know, you watch, because Bruce is also watching the Gray Ghost with his dad.
Yeah.
And you get to hear Conroy doing the voice of Thomas Wayne, which he'll do in at least one other episode that we're watching today. But I mean, he would regularly do that voice, and it's like, okay, finish the Gray Ghost, and then it's time for bed, Bruce.
Yeah. and Bruce is like even wearing like the little Gray Ghost hat, and he has a little Gray Ghost action figure, and you can tell he's like totally like in love with this superhero that he's looked up to. So he has this dream, and he realizes that the bomber has a connection to this old TV show, right? So he goes to Alfred, and they're trying to like figure out if they can get like some videos of the Gray Ghost TV show. Unfortunately, they've all been destroyed. Yeah. Or there's no VHS copies, and they go to a guy who has an archive of supposedly every like film reel ever made, but not of the Gray Ghost, because they were all burned down in a fire.
Yeah, everything but that one, bub.
Like... yep. So then we finally meet Mr. Trent. He's the actor that portrayed the Gray Ghost,
voiced by Adam West.
Yep. And there's a lot of great voices, as we all know, in this animated series.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, at least I wanted to do this one because it is the connection point through the generations. You know, right. Batman would have been off the air for over 20 years by the time this show started.
Right.
You know, so it was. And things were not as easily immediately accessible as they are now. You know, a show that's 30 years ago, go watch Twin Peaks. It's there. But it's like back in the day, you aren't finding that unless it's on a rerun or something.
Right. Yeah. There might have been some VHS tapes of 66. But like, yeah, I mean, you weren't really getting those at this point. They're usually, you know, VHS tapes, once they went away, it would be like hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Or you could find like one, and it'd be, yeah. I mean, in the 90s too, like there was no eBay, you know, yeah. Of course.
So
kids, if you're listening, you couldn't just go online and buy a VHS tape. You'd have to go track that down, or like you could go to a con or something, and it'd be like a copied tape. And it was
for sure.
And it would cost like $50, maybe sometimes even $100 to get that tape.
And maybe so with expensive. Commercials.
Yeah. And there was probably commercials on it.
So even though this episode of Batman, the animated series, is now older than Batman 66 was when this episode came out, it's much easier for us to get a hold of this. And for the people at the time, if you had grown up on Batman, I'm sure there were a good amount of people who hadn't consumed any Batman material since maybe they saw the movie, mm-hmm. and then this cartoon comes out and they watch it with their kid or whatever, and it's like, hey, that was my Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another great thing about the animated series too, is it wasn't dumbed down, you know. So like when I was watching it with my dad, like he was so excited to watch it too, because it was a show you could watch with your kids and you didn't feel bad about it. You weren't like, oh, I'm so annoyed by this cartoon, because it was so smart. And yeah, adults loved it too. So Trent is, you know, down on his luck. He can't get roles anymore. He's talking to his agent on the phone, and the agent's just like, sorry, guy. Like, you know, everyone just thinks of you as the Gray Ghost. You didn't get the role. and he's just, you know, just beside himself. He
curses the Grey Ghost.
Yeah. Oh, Grey Ghost, I curse you.
I can't help but think maybe there's some realism with Adam West there, who really didn't have much of a career.
No.
After Batman. Batman. I mean, absolutely. Iconic as Batman. And and it's a Shatner as well. You know, these characters, it's not so much, I don't think, like that. But I mean, Luke Skywalker, speaking of the show, you know, it's like, you never saw him again. He's just
he was in the Guyver. Watch it.
Sure. But like these guys, they, you know, they're legends, they're legendary figures and characters. And then they, because they have so much association with it, they weren't able to get jobs. So I feel like that's a lot of, like, Adam West is like, I can relate to that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it wasn't until after this too that Adam West started getting more roles in like Robot Chicken and stuff like that. Like, he was getting a lot more voice roles later, you know, because of stuff like this.
And because finally the people who grew up with that stuff were in charge of stuff and can bring you in.
Yeah.
Like he's the mayor on Family Guy. And it's like,
yeah,
obviously that's what Seth MacFarlane was watching.
Right. And Seth Green is actually as well in a late episode we're going to talk about too. And so it all comes back around. It's all the animated series family. So Trent ends up selling a lot of his Grey Ghost props, including his original costume, to a toy store called Yester Toys that, you know, buys all of his stuff. But the kid, he looks like a kid, basically, tells him that he can't pay much for them since there's not much of a market for Grey Ghost, you know, props or toys anymore. But he'll take, you know, whatever he can get. He's got to pay the rent, right? Poor guy.
Yeah.
So Trent goes back home to his now empty house, or should be empty house.
For the most part,
he's just, and he throws, you know, whatever's left at his poster of the Grey Ghost. That's all he has. And he's just crying. He's so sad. Meanwhile, Batman and Commissioner Gordon are still trying to figure out who this mad bomber is. He's bombed another place.
And he's going to blow up
the Gotham Bank, yeah. Alfred and Batman have figured out who Trent is, or who the Grey Ghost is. They're like, oh, he lives in Gotham. Sweet. Yeah. Let's go track him down.
And Bruce remembers the episode, The Mad Bomber. So he's really looking for that episode.
Yes.
In particular. So they go to Trent's.
Yes, they go to Trent's. Trent doesn't want to help him. Like, he's just like, has no interest in helping him at all.
He goes as Batman.
He goes as Batman, not as Bruce Wayne. Yeah. Let's be clear on that.
He surprises him in his apartment.
Basically shuts the door in his face. But that night,
he opens up his closet and reveals that he has
So first Trent is like, out. No. And all of his stuff reappears in his house. All of the props, all of his costumes, everything is back. He gets a note that says, meet him at midnight, or meet, you know, a friend. Trent's really happy that he got all of his stuff back. So he goes and meets someone at midnight. And it turns out it's Batman.
What a someone.
Yeah, what a someone. And again, tries to convince him, like, please, you know, you have to help us. I need to know who the mad bomber is. Do you have any idea? And then they hear like a whirring noise, and you can see Trent's eyes light up, like he knows what it is, but he still doesn't want to help Batman. He's just kind of like runs around the corner. And then that's when the art museum blows up.
Yeah.
So Batman lets him run away, and he knows exactly where he's going. He's going home. And that's when he pops back up in his apartment again. Yeah.
And he's like, please, presses him. Yeah. I need help with this. And then he opens the closet, reveals that he has every episode.
Yeah.
Like individually labeled, and then gives him the videos. He has the original film canisters.
Right. Yeah.
Which further implies that they wanted this to be movie serials, but
Yeah.
Little kids. Wait, how do you explain that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Probably would have had a hard time explaining that to most adults in the 90s. They also didn't grow up with that.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, gives him the film canister and is like, just go get out of here. Yeah. I'm not the Grey Ghost. And Bruce is like, I see that now.
Yeah. And he's very sad. It's like a tear coming down Batman's face. Like,
yeah.
But I based my entire career around you.
Whoa. Yes. Which we will find out much later.
Oh, yeah.
Or towards the end of the episode, how much is based on.
The Grey Ghost. Where were we? So he leaves. And then Bruce and Alfred have a little movie night together. Alfred makes some popcorn. He sets up the reel. They have like a nice little screening, you know, because of course Bruce Wayne has a movie room in his house.
He's got it all, whatever he needs.
Yeah.
You never, I mean, he, I'm sure he's had to look at old film reels 17 times in his career as Batman.
Yeah.
But he, for there being bomb threats around the city, Bruce is joyous. Look on his face.
Yeah, he's just so like elated and excited. He's like, oh, finally, I just get to relax and watch a movie. Like,
yeah, he's grinning, eating popcorn,
watching
his favorite childhood show.
Yeah. So they immediately figure out that it's these little toy cars. They hear the whirring noise, and then that little toy car comes around the corner in the movie, and that's the Mad Bomber's way of blowing up things.
Yeah, you can drive a remote control car with bombs inside of it wherever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the sound.
It's the sound, right. And I don't know why Grey Ghost couldn't just told him that, but...
He was scared. I guess.
He was scared, sure.
I don't know what that'll have to do with him getting a new acting gig, but he should have been like, help me get a gig, and then I'll tell you whatever.
Yeah, and Bruce Wayne definitely could have done that.
Yeah.
He has a lot of money and power, you think.
Yeah.
So Gordon and Batman hook up again, and Batman tells him that it's these toy cars, and it's the library. Gotham Library is going to be hit next. And so they immediately start seeing these little cars everywhere. Some of them are decoys. Some of them are bombs. They're like shooting these cars. They're blowing up everywhere.
Yeah, they try to blow up Batman in an alley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He narrowly escapes,
and Grey Ghost appears and saves Batman. Hooray!
Yeah.
So they begin working together, but then Batman gets some information back about the toy cars, and there turns out they're the original props, and only Grey Ghost fingerprints are on them.
And Batman turns on him. Immediately. It's him, and he's like, I had nothing to do with this.
And Batman totally like blames Grey Ghost. It's like, you had so much faith in him, and now I guess it's broken real quick. The real quick turnaround.
But then they flip it back real quick.
Yeah, they flip it back. Trent says that he sold all of his memorabilia months ago, which we've already figured out. And then he says like, oh, it can't be him. Oh yes, the toy collector. So it's they go back to Yester Toys. And it's that little scheming kid man, boy child, man child, I guess.
Is the toy collector like an established villain, or is that just them like kind of giving a villain name to this guy? Because it makes it sound like he's a super villain, right? The toy collector.
The toy collector. Now, this is definitely a new villain for the animated series. Because some of them are real villains and some of them are just made up in animated land. Like Harley Quinn.
I think of the collector in The Simpsons.
Or the collector in the Marvel Universe.
It's the same thing. I'm gonna keep you behind plastic or whatever, but
it
was him. He's crazy.
He is crazy. All right, so the kid has totally lost his mind. He's drunk with power, and he starts beating up Batman with all of his many toys. It just turns out he's like a big nerdy incel with lots of big big dreams of extortion, right? So him and Grey Ghost just beat him up basically and arrest him. Not much of a fight.
It's a big old nerd episode. Grey Ghost is the only one who's not a nerd.
Yeah.
But even he's a nerd for his own character, I guess.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be though. He has big dreams too.
Yeah, just, I mean, Shatner didn't want to just be Kirk, I'm sure.
Probably not. Wanted He's also Shatner. Not the best actor, though.
I've always said that the greatest missed opportunity was that Adam West and William Shatner weren't like brothers or whatever. Like literally any
slow talking.
Any project where, what do you think we should do? And I'm just like, I don't know.
Like, that would
have been great.
Yeah, they still have a No. They don't have a chance anymore.
Adam West should have gone. He should have showed up on a third. I mean, look, third season of Star Trek, not great. Like, Adam West should have beamed up at some point. How did we get here, Robin? Oh, God. It would have been terrible, but
it would have been real bad. Like, can either of you talk a little faster? All right. So yeah, they defeat him, and then Bruce and the Great Ghost. Well, or Bruce helps the Great Ghost get back on track with his career. He has like a signing for him. They release all the Great Ghost videos. Finally, yeah, it's a really nice little happy ending.
Yeah, all 100 episodes on 50 VHS tapes.
Yeah,
but it makes it seem like he's getting some money for it all. And then at some point they get into the Bat Cave, right? And the Gray Ghost is like, it's an exact replica of the Gray Ghost. And then he's like, secret lair.
Yeah.
And so we find out that the entire Bat Cave is just like a total nerd's like recreation of that. And he's almost everything he's done is modeled after the Gray Ghost, which I just love that like little thing where it's like no one's ever called it because no one watched the Gray Ghost,
right?
The dork who was watching it, it's like Superman's been there but he never watched it, so Selena doesn't know.
No, it's funny too because like you know we're always told that he had this dream, or like, you know, he gets and he sees like the bats and the cave and all of that. But then we're led to find out, oh no, it's actually because of the Gray Ghost. Wait a minute.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe both, you know, how things work, right?
Yeah.
It's mixing, but I just liked that little detail.
Oh yeah, definitely. So yeah, that's the Gray Ghost. So that was our first episode.
Yeah. Beware the Gray Ghost.
Beware the Gray Ghost.
And it's just a great episode. They're all on HBO once again. Watch them.
So I Am the Night, written by Michael Reeves, directed again by Bob Kirkland. He directs a lot of episodes. So Batman is real tired in this episode.
Yeah, this is a crisis of faith episode.
The
Batman No More.
Batman
right?
No
if,
More, right?
If you will. Where's the iconic garbage can?
Right.
That garbage can should get its own comic for the number of superhero suits that got thrown in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the greatest supervillain ever.
The garbage can?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, basically the war on Gotham has continued. Batman opens the pages of the Gotham Times, which is also just its own character, by the way, in this show. Just the Gotham Times. The amount of times he just opens the Gotham Times. He sees the headlines of the Penguin conviction has been overturned, and he's just like, oh God. It's like,
yeah, it never ends. I just stuck that guy away.
Right. So then we like cut to Gordon and Harvey Bullock. Bullock doing some kind of sting. They're just waiting for some criminals. And then there's also there's a lot of cutscenes in the beginning of this episode. Then there's also a cutscene to a window with all sorts of like bat merchandise everywhere. And then there's another cutscene to like a kid. This is the kid that we mentioned a little bit ago, played by Seth Green. And he's getting roughed up by some henchmen.
But he doesn't like Batman.
No, but he does not like Batman. So yeah, that's important. And then we go back to Batman and him and Dr. Leslie, his doctor confidant. Are leaving some roses in the alley where Bruce's parents were shot.
Yeah, he
famous crime alley.
Yes. He says like every year I come here, I wonder if this should be the last time. When should it end? You know, and he's really like expressing his doubts with Batman at all.
Right.
And then in insane wisdom that's packed into like a kid's show, she's like, Santayana said, those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it, you know, implying like he shouldn't abandon what happened because these things could still happen. And, you know, Bruce has read his Santayana.
Yeah.
he's got the parry for that one immediately. And he's like, he also said, a fanatic is someone who redoubles his efforts while losing sight of his goal.
Right.
Which just in that, like, you know, a few seconds, I absolutely went over my head as a kid. That positions the whole struggle of Batman himself, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because absolutely. He's aware, do I bring these people here? Is my madness infectious? Is that why villains are showing up? Am I a magnet, right? He's aware of this, but he's also aware that if he's not there, who's going to stop these people? So he's constantly torn by this. This is just an episode that chooses to focus on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the sting that they have set up is for this gangster called the Jazz Man.
And who's really scary.
He's scary.
Surprisingly freaky.
He's very effective. And yeah, supposedly Batman has given Bullock and Commissioner Gordon all this like, you know, background information about this sting. And, but you know, he's taken this, stop at Crime Alley first, cause this is the day he always does that, but he's, taken a little bit longer because this kid is getting roughed up in this alley. So he hasn't made it to the sting yet.
Yeah.
The things aren't going so well at the sting. Turns out Jazzman knows the police are coming. He's been tipped off. So everyone's getting kind of shot up over there. There's a helicopter that crashes. Like, a bunch of things are going real bad for them.
Yeah.
And Bullock says this must have been a setup. And Bullock's always pissed off at Batman. Like, even though he helps him all the time, has saved his life multiple times.
Well, sure.
He's just always pissed off at Batman.
He's a J. Jonah Jameson type.
Right.
But, I mean, he is... He does have a little bit here because I guess the plan was that Batman was supposed to be there.
Right.
But he got stopped up real quick. But he was taking his little stroll that for his parents. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Which, of course, Bruce is going to blame himself for the events that happened. But Harvey does have one on him here where he's like, you were supposed to be there and it was a setup. If you had been there, we would have known.
Right. Yeah, because that, of course, I mean, this kid is getting roughed up in the alley, and he's gonna stop these guys. I mean, they say they're like gonna cut out his tongue or something like that, like something real bad.
Yeah. Well, we know it was. Yeah. He was doing the right thing, but
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Batman finally makes it over to the Jazz Man. Shake up, whatever. He's like throwing his tear gas bombs, and he like, you know, breaks everything up and. You know, the Jazz Man jumps out a window and he's driving his truck down the alley and Batman swings in and saves the day, basically, right? Sure. But just before that, Jazz Man shot Commissioner Gordon. Mm-hmm. And you just see Batman's face like drop, and he has, you know, the famous, like, you know, Batman always has those little like triangular eyes in the
They're
show.
Opposite triangles.
This opposite, he's just like just so distraught because Commissioner Gordon is basically like his father.
Mm-hmm. It's my fault.
It's my fault. No.
He screams at the sky on his knees. Mm-hmm. The most classic.
Yeah.
depiction of agony and sadness that cinema has ever come up with.
Right.
So we get one of those. No.
So he's taken to the hospital, of course. Barbara Gordon is there and tells Batman not to blame himself. Says if he hadn't stopped it. The crime in Crime Alley, it never would have happened.
Yeah, I love Batman being consoled in bat suit.
Yes, it's all right, Batman. Just patting him on his cape.
Yeah.
So there, Batman.
We don't want sad Batman.
Yeah. But Bullock shows up and he's like, you know, disagrees, of course. He's like, if you hadn't stopped, he wouldn't have been shot. And he's just like, no. So Batman is obviously pissed off. Meanwhile, back at Stonegate Prison, Jazzman is concocting a plan to get rid of Gordon permanently. So
we're going
to
get this guy out of here.
Got to get him. And then back at the Batcave, Dick Grayson shows up. It's the first time we've seen Dick Grayson in a bit. And he's a little bit older now.
Mm-hmm.
So I like how they age Robin through this, because eventually he will become Nightwing in this later on.
And he's not always there, which is both the advantage of you don't always have Batman and Robin episodes, which is everyone's happy about that. But also it is implying that he's allowed to have a real life a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Because he does go to university or call it. Or maybe it starts in high school.
Yeah.
And then goes to university. They definitely age him up. He's not 12.
No, he's not.
I don't think he ever was 12 in this show's depiction.
He looks pretty young in the beginning, I think. But yeah, I don't remember how old he is. But yeah, he does look young in the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he shows up and tries to talk Batman off the ledge. It doesn't go so well, though. Batman just won't stop blaming himself that like everything has been going wrong in Gotham and it's all his fault. Like he chose this life and he chose the night, he says.
Yeah.
He says
we picked these episodes because Kevin Conroy apparently really liked the anguish.
Oh yeah.
He liked getting into the anguish, so.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he goes through this speech. He says, "I chose this life. I used the night. I became the night. Sooner or later, I'll go down. It might be the Joker or Two-Face or just some punk who gets lucky. My decision, no regrets. But I can't let anyone else pay for my mistakes." Yeah. It's a good speech. Solid.
It's good. It's good. He's got the burden on him, as always. That's why he does this. Is that when he's talking about how much Gordon means to him, too? To Robin, or is that later with Alfred?
I think that's later with Alfred. Yeah, this is just when he's super mad about everything. Yeah. Jazzman escapes Stonegate Prison. Dick says he's going to go after him, but Bruce tells him it's his fight. Jazzman immediately goes to the hospital after he's escaped this like watery, ocean, like kind of like Alcatraz in a way. I was like, damn, Jazzman is solid. And he knocks out a window washer and uses the window lift to get to Gordon's room. But of course, Batman is there to stop him. Barbara Gordon is there as well. She's like lying over her dad. Gordon wakes up just in time since Batman like throws his batarang into the gun of Jazzman. It blows up in his face. And they obviously stop the Jazzman from shooting Gordon again.
The dreaded Jazzman, man.
He's tough. So yeah, Gordon wakes up. They ask, how did the bus go? Did the bus go okay?
Yeah.
It went great, Gordon. Everything's A-okay.
He didn't remember any of that stuff.
No.
Yeah.
And then they have this like really heartfelt moment. And Gordon tells Batman that maybe if he was younger, he could be like him, a hero. Oh, Batman tells him he is the hero. It's very nice.
It's very sweet. I mean, this is about how much Gordon means to him. In the episode, he says he's more than a friend, and that he's the same age that his father would have been.
Right.
So implying that they're of the same age. Maybe there's even a backstory there. Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
But just like laying it on, like that's the father figure.
Yeah.
Exact same age.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. I had never thought about that. Their relationship, Thomas Wayne and Gordon, but of course they could have had a relationship.
Yeah. Batman's feeling a lot better after that, and he leaves and sees that same kid that he saved earlier at the bus stop. And he thinks he's grifting again and stealing somebody's suitcase at the bus stop. But it turns out the kid is just leaving Gotham for good and going back home. And that's his suitcase. Damn it, Batman. so he gives us like a nice little speech to Batman, about how Batman basically saved his life and, taught him a meaningful lesson. And now he's going to go back home and live his life.
And he went from a non-believer who scoffs at Batman to a believer.
Yeah. So Batman's faith is restored and all is good.
Yeah.
Yay.
Great episode. Mm-hmm. At some point, you also get Kevin Conroy delivering the famous Nietzsche. When one gazes into the abyss, the abyss gazes back into you, and then he throws the mask into a chasm.
That's right.
I'm just like, wow, this is what an episode. The quoting philosophers, philosophers.
Multiple.
pretty heavy subject matter for 6-year-olds. I approve.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. Like, the parents can watch this and be like, damn, you know. Yeah.
I got something to go think about.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, not dumbing down anything in these shows. All right. So let's move along here. So the next episode we're going to do is Double Talk. So this is definitely more, we tried to stay away a little bit from the villains episodes, but I don't know, somehow we ended up on this one. But this really just shows Batman's compassion, I think, more than anything.
Yeah. Once someone's apprehended by the law,
right,
he does not give up on that person. Exactly. He has now taken it's not just Harvey Dent, right?
Right.
Or whatever. Has taken an invested interest in these people that he apprehends that, I mean, it's probably not the psycho murderer guys, but like the guys that have a tragic story, you know, that didn't maybe necessarily have to be villains. Victor Freeze, Harvey, right? Of course.
Yeah.
And Arnold, the ventriloquist.
Yeah. Arnold Wesker. He's the ventriloquist. He's been in Arkham for a while now. And he's having a vivid nightmare basically about his old buddy Scarface, his puppet.
Yeah.
And
who's the puppet? And who's the puppet, master?
Mm-hmm. He wakes up in a frantic, and then he checks next to his bedside and you see his release papers. So he's going to be released from Arkham. And next he's talking to a psychiatrist. He's worried about his release. You know, what if Scarface comes back? And the psychiatrist kind of like calms him down. She's telling him he's cured, like, don't worry, like, everything's gonna be okay. But he looks very nervous, and I love the way they show Arnold. Like, he almost reminds me of like a Charlie Brown character. Like,
yeah, he's not drawn as the rest of the cast.
No,
he doesn't have pupils.
He only has pupils, no eyes.
Just, you know, pure cartooning.
Yeah.
And I think that works especially well for that character, because, like, especially when it's him with Scarface, he's really like a non-entity almost.
Yeah.
So he is always drawn with like a blankness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like he's just this little ghost guy or something.
Yeah. He also kind of reminds me of Mole Man from The Simpsons for some reason. I don't know. He's just like, you know, well, he's just so quaint and like, and little and. Yeah, he just looks so small compared to everybody.
I mean, just the idea of giving that guy a focus episode is deeply interesting. You know, I don't know if this had been done in the comics before, but like, to take that duo and then just separate them and have it be like a crisis and stuff is ingenious.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Arnold is getting a second chance, and Bruce Wayne has taken an interest in this, obviously.
Yeah.
So Bruce Wayne gives him an apartment and even a new mailroom job at Wayne Enterprises.
And it's not halfway home, but maybe it did say that. Basically, implying that Wayne has these, right? And this probably isn't the only one.
Mm-mm.
So he has these through Gotham, which is both a way to help the people of the city, right? But also, if he knows where these dudes are posted up, it's easier for him to keep tabs on them, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, he's outside the window.
He's literally outside the window watching him.
Yeah.
A little creepy, but you know, just in case. I mean, he did murder people.
Yes.
So.
No. It's very definitely should be kept an eye on.
Yeah.
But yeah, Arnold is like, there's it's like a guardian angel's looking out for me. And then we pull out of the window and then Batman just like,
yeah, he's like, cool. He's all right right now.
Yeah.
So he's working in the mailroom. His Bruce Wayne asks him how he's doing. You know, he's like, oh, Mr. Wayne, like, thank you for this opportunity. And, you know, everything seems all right. But then after, you know, a nice hard day work, he's strolling down the street, just like, you know, just whistling, looks like he's having a good day. And his old henchman, Scarface's old henchman, I should say, kind of just push around the corner and start asking him a whole lot of questions like, hey, when is the old Scarface coming back? You know?
Yeah. When's the boss? When are you and the boss gonna?
Yeah. A lot of that. A lot of mafia talk. And he's just like, oh no, leave me alone. Like, you know, he just wants to go home. Like,
yeah.
It's really sad, actually.
It is sad, but also he didn't learn anything. You just gotta be like, the boss has a plan.
Right.
And you two numbskulls don't know nothing. So keep it zipped and then just run the fuck away.
Right. But luckily Batman is watching out for him still.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, one thing I must say though, like, is that all Batman's doing that week?
I don't know, probably. Probably.
He's agenda this week. Just Arnold.
We don't see it, but he has a tracker on him.
Yeah, true. Probably.
Yeah.
That's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of other crime going on in Gotham that week, right?
There's got to be. He's hopping around.
Yeah.
Gordon got shot actually again during this episode because he was watching Arnold, but, you know, Batman already did that. So,
yeah. And then he's going to go into a shame spiral all over again. And
yeah.
This happens actually every week. We just don't know about it.
Because he can't be everywhere.
Yeah. God damn it, Batman. That's why he has to have all those child soldiers.
Exactly. Ah,
now we know.
Now we know.
All right. So, we should also say, too, this is actually season 3. By the way,
yeah, it's the adventures of Batman and Robin by now, right?
Yeah,
which even as a kid, I was like, I don't understand this. I was like, this is the same show,
yeah.
Like, what
this
are you guys
might
doing?
Be the new, actually, you know what? I think this is the new adventures of Batman,
okay? And then it becomes the new adventures of
Batman and Robin,
yeah. They like rebranded it, but it really was just the same show,
it was the same show, yeah.
They did change the art style, I remember.
Yes. In this like one, the art style changes.
The Joker's eyes become like black with white pupils, which was always frightening, frightening.
It was a little more scary. And like, yeah, Batgirl's costume changes a little bit. So does Catwoman's too. Oh, yeah. Catwoman's is in the new era, the Batman and Robin, where they change her to the black costume, which I did not like.
Oh, yeah, it was gray. Yeah. And yeah, was Batgirl even in the old show? Or is she not until new?
No, she's in the first season. There's good, actually, double episode. The Batman comes in and saves them. He runs home, and that's when he starts hearing Scarface's voice again. Mm-hmm. So not good. It sounds like he's losing control. Then the next day he starts delivering the mail again, and then you start seeing letters from Scarface calling him dummy, and then he gets another letter and says to answer his phone at midnight from Scarface, and he's like, ah! You know, he starts really losing it.
Yeah, he's being haunted by a ventriloquist dummy.
I know.
Which is maybe an homage to like that Twilight Zone episode or something.
Sure.
Or like I was thinking about that. Yeah,
one of my scariest movies of all time.
Or the Goosebumps, right? With Slappy.
I just don't like ventriloquist dummies like at all. Like,
no, they're unsettling. Yeah. They're always used for terror.
Had one called Edison.
Oh.
And
oh no,
like, yeah, he still has it too, and I hate it so much.
They're creepy.
Dies in a fire. Sorry, Dad.
They were in Toy Story 4 too, when and they're like, she has, it's like a baby doll character who's like supposed to be like a gangster.
Yeah.
And those are her goons. Yeah. Or like silent goons. And they come up and they don't say anything. And they just like grab you.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Always used for creepiness in media.
Yeah, because they're terrifying.
Yeah.
Okay. So when he gets home that night, he's like shivering on his couch. And he gets the call. at midnight. And Scarface tells him he can't get rid of him so easily. And then he tells him to look outside. And in the phone booth, you see like the shadow of Scarface sitting in the phone booth. And so he like freaks out and like runs outside. And turns out Batman, of course, has been watching him this whole time.
Still, yeah.
Yeah.
And he saw something in the phone booth as did. Well. So it's not right. all in Arnold's head.
Exactly. And he also can hear that phone call yeah. as well, because he's tapped his phone. And he's wait a minute. Like, that wasn't in his head. That was on the phone. Like, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah.
That dummy voice should be in his head, because it's Arnold. It's not an outside entity.
Ideally.
So, yeah. Things are starting to seem a little bit weird. So they go on this like big chase scene with Arnold and the dummy, which is chasing him, which again doesn't make any sense.
And attacking him.
Yeah, and attacking him. And again, that doesn't make any sense because the dummy can't run because it's usually attached to him. So Batman is very confused. Arnold is very scared. None of that makes sense. So eventually the dummy, quote unquote, gets away along with Arnold. Batman and Batgirl team up this time and are trying to figure out what's going on with Scarface. And they figure out that there's been a voice box implanted in Arnold's house this whole time and in his phone. And so someone's been trying to make Arnold go crazy.
Yeah.
And it's work. It's working.
Sure. He's on the edge of a precipice anyway.
Exactly.
He's trying.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, they explore these subjects in all sorts of ones. Harvey's trying to be good and it's his face is fixed and then his face gets hurt again and shatters him, you know, like.
Right. Yeah.
Mental illness is just like at the core of basically all of Batman's mythology.
No, villains, right? Especially.
All villains. Sure.
Yeah.
It's your fault. Okay, buddy. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. And they always blame Batman.
Yeah. Or insert whoever they're blaming.
Right. they track down this guy, Hip McManus.
Yeah.
Who was Irish.
Yes.
A really bad Irish accent, though, I must say. Like, they have all these voice actors, and I'm like, where'd they find this guy?
Yeah. He's an Irish criminal. He's a little person.
Yeah.
And he's just coming home. He steals some milk from the neighbor
and a newspaper.
Yeah. Just to show he's a mildly, like, not a scumbag, just like not a great guy still.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah. But in his apartment, they jump him. Batgirl and Batman, and they're like, we've been admiring your costumes or your outfits or something like that. And he shows a Scarface, like, sort of Halloween costume sort of
thing. Like a little suit. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little Scarface suit. They figure out that he's been impersonating Scarface, and they ask him, like, who hired you, you know? And then eventually he gives it up that it was Scarface's old lackeys.
Yeah. The goons. Yeah.
And yeah, so they figure that out. But unfortunately, it's a little bit too late because Arnold has gone back into his madness and the real Scarface has resurfaced.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that. Someone needs to lock that thing up. But
yeah. Where'd they get that dummy? I think the goons had it, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the ventriloquist and Scarface reunite and begin causing havoc immediately at Wayne Enterprises. They capture Lucius Fox and make him open like that giant safe, whatever.
Yeah, it is, voice activated vault. Safe.
Well, yeah. God damn it. I really had hope for him.
Yeah. And I mean, once he just becomes invisible again. Once Scarface is there, Arnold really isn't there.
Yeah.
Even though it is him, but right.
Yeah, he calls him the dummy.
Yeah, it's interesting how they're able to get this stuff across in like just strictly in the animation, you know, subtleties that it's like in some way this guy probably feels weak all the time. But when Scarface is there, he's allowed to disappear because he's someone else, you know, and it's like that's why he never says anything or does anything. I mean, in this episode, that's the difference. But
yeah, So of course, Batman and Batgirl have figured this out, and they make their way over to Wayne Enterprises as well. So another big fight ensues. It's always some big fight, you know. But yes. They immediately knock out the henchmen, and Scarface and the ventriloquist run away. And they get to like that little outside area where there's like, you know, big scaffoldings and a bridge and everything. And they chase him down. But then Scarface ends up turning on his own men because he's like, you impersonated me. No one impersonates Scarface.
Yeah. So, yeah, he doesn't like, he's like, you two, you know, nincompoops, whatever, using all idiots. That like classic gangster talk. And he's like, I was lying low, waiting for the heat to die down. Yeah. And use twos morons, you know.
Like, yeah, he's real. Puppets have giant egos. That's what I got from this. Like,
he does have a big head.
Yeah, he does have a big head. That's true. So yeah, he like brings his Tommy gun up and, you know, gonna shoot them. Yeah. Hey, you. So then Batgirl swings in and saves the henchmen. Then he's gonna shoot Batman, right?
Yeah, Scarface and shoot. Arnold have the Tommy gun pointed on Batman, but then the puppet is being kind of mean to Arnold, right? And it's enough that Arnold like throws him aside, or no, he gets knocked aside, and then he's yelling at him. He's like, "You shoot him, you idiot!" Blah 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 blah.
Right? Yeah, he's talking to Arnold in his head. On the floor, on the ground, because Batman had used his batarang to knock the puppet down.
But then instead of shooting Batman, Arnold turns the Tommy gun on the puppet and annihilates him, and then he falls off a building and then gets sucked into a giant fan and turned into
dust, like puppet dust,
sawdust. Yeah. And my brain went to like Goosebumps again, and I was like, don't breathe it in.
Right.
They'll possess you.
I thought that too. Yeah. I was like, oh no, Batman's going to get possessed by Scarface.
Which would be a good sequel episode to this episode where someone's like, I collected the sawdust. Yeah. And they like mix it in a drink and then they have a new puppet.
Right.
You thought I was gone.
Yeah. But that does not happen.
No.
Instead, Arnold gets a third chance at life.
Yes.
Because Batman is very compassionate, and that's what we're talking about in the beginning. And he goes back to his little apartment with that lady who runs the halfway house.
Yeah.
And he's gonna start over again.
I appreciated that, though there is a villainous little person in this episode, the lady who runs the halfway house is a little person and is as nice as can be. So not to really create negative stereotypes of Irish little people criminals.
Yeah.
Just the Irish. Just negative stereotypes.
There's only Irish little people criminals in the world. Yes. That's very nice. And also strange.
It's Gotham City.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Double Talk for you.
Yeah. Not a huge Kevin-centric episode, but an amazing episode of the show in general.
Oh, yeah.
And you should watch every episode anyway, people. So why does it matter?
It doesn't matter, really. So we're just going to quickly run through the last laugh. Sure. I had to pick one that Paul Dini directed and Bruce Timm wrote.
Yeah, because we had done our whole list and we didn't have one with either of them.
No. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold on here.
They
and
did also, stuff.
Yeah. And also because this is based on the Marshall Rogers Joker Fish comic, which is one of my favorite comics of all time. Detective Comics. So, and yeah, it's just an amazing episode. It's called The Last Laugh. And it starts off again with the Gotham Times. I'm telling you, man, Gotham Times.
I want a subscription.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Start selling that in the shops.
Yeah, right.
And then whatever the
dude by DC.
Whatever the Bugle, I would buy the Daily Bugle Beast. And the Planet.
Yeah, yeah. You should just have all three of them.
I'd buy that. I need the news. Right. I need to know what's going on. I need the news
from Gotham. All right, so Bizarre Joker Fish Terrified Gotham Harbor, and that's the very start, and we see the smiling Joker Fish, which is so iconic. And the very first line is dissection tray, please, Alfred. So Bruce is dissecting one of the Joker fish. So the Joker basically in this episode wants to copyright all fish because he's apparently transformed all of the ocean, or at least in Gotham Bay, all of the fish in Gotham Bay into Joker fish.
Yeah, I love when the Joker attempts legitimate business practices. It's some of the funniest stuff.
It really is. And Mark Hamill is absolutely amazing in this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, he always is. When is he not, you know?
He's got Ham in his name for a reason.
Oh, yeah. Because he makes the Joker hilarious, but still so psychotic. Like, just with the little words that he says, just to, like, twist it just enough.
Yeah.
And it just really shows when he's talking to poor Mr. Francis, who is the copyright director of the Bay, I guess. I don't know.
You can cover whatever you want, Joker.
Yeah. So yeah, he's basically under attack because you can't copyright fish. That's not how it works. No. And he wants to copyright fish because he's turned them all into smiling fish. He's even made a fun little commercial called Joker Fish where Harley is singing the praises of the Joker fish, and no, she hates fish and doesn't want to eat them, but Joker makes her eat them anyways. So they go into his office and threaten him. And if he doesn't do it by midnight, then he's going to die, which is pretty scary.
Not a normal copyright contract.
So Harley sprays Mr. Francis with a gas and then a giant swordfish comes through the window, releases another gas, which then the toxins combine, and then the Joker toxin takes over, you know, making him laugh, you know, like crazy. Luckily, yes. Batman is there, uses the Joker antidote to save him. But now we know that everyone's going to be under attack from this.
You got to keep those on you at all times.
Yeah. Joker then threatens the second in command, but Batman is ready for him this time and has switched places with Joker's prey. This time Joker has used the owner's cat to bring a Joker fish in, and which is hilarious because the cat has that like the Joker smile and is carrying a Joker fish in his mouth.
Some of the episodes are a little more silly.
Yeah. But I love, you know, the Joker fish and like that weird fucking creepy smile too, right? Like,
well, yeah, that's why it became iconic, right?
Yeah. And it's still really creepy. And it goes directly after the fake Batman. So Batman's like, I knew it would go directly for its master. Like,
he knows the psychology of fish.
Yeah, or cats.
Yeah, both.
Both. So the cat scratches the fake Batman again. The toxin starts working immediately, and he goes and gives the antidote to the guy. So Bullock was there and he's like, fuck this. Well, he doesn't say that, but that would be amazing. On a kid's show. Fuck this. I'm getting out of here.
He says it, just not on camera.
Right. Just not on camera. But he's like, I'm out of here. Right. He's like, I'm going to go catch Joker myself. And he's figured out before even Batman does, turns out Bullock does have some brains, that the fish was a Japanese tang. And that's not local to the area, and that it's actually from the Gotham Aquarium. Batman figures this out as well, like minutes later, and they all head out to the Gotham Aquarium together. This is like one of my favorites. So Joker and Harley are like dancing around at the aquarium, being, you know, Joker and Harley. Like, this is when you see like that iconic, like Joker just treating Harley like trash. And Harley just being in love with his psychotic ways. His Joker's like, I'm going to treat you like a mermaid of the sea. And Harley's like, oh, Pudding, I love you so much. And then he just sticks like a giant fish like over her head. Oh, my God. It's just crazy. Like how much you missed like when you were a kid. And then you see now what is really happening in their relationship constantly.
Well, she's come very far.
She has. Yeah. It's a lot nicer now nowadays.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, she was sort of created to be a Joker's punching bag.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yappy dog punching bag.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the testament of a character, is that even though that was unfortunately the how she was designed, she broke through all of that. And you know, yeah, you can't stop. There's no bad characters, just bad writing or whatever.
Oh yeah, definitely. So
now she's more popular than Batman. So
yeah, that's crazy. Well, yeah.
Not really.
Not really.
More popular than almost anybody.
Yeah, I mean, in the show, or like, or just in comics too. Definitely one of the most popular characters. So Bullock, of course, he thinks he's very smart, but immediately gets captured by Harley. Like, she just points her, you know, fake toy gun at him and captures him with her rope gun. And then uses him as shark bait, because there's smiley sharks there as well that have their own grins. And then Batman eventually shows up, tries to save him, also gets captured. And then both of them get thrown into the giant shark tank. And then in famous cartoon style, you know, Batman's cuffed with giant chains, puts the chains around the shark mouth and rides the shark like a horse.
Yeah,
and that's what's so great about cartoons, is you can do whatever you want. Like,
well, sure. I mean, it's a much closer adaptation that of the comics than a movie.
Oh yeah, with
real people. It's always going to make more sense for comics, I think.
Definitely. So they break out of the giant shark tank, and with the shark, you know, breaking through the glass, which. And the shark gets saved and goes into the ocean. I was worried about the shark. I was like, what's going to happen to the shark? Always.
Yeah.
And
what happened to the cat?
What happened to the cat? Oh, by the way, he did inject the cat as well.
Oh, okay. Good. The cat doesn't want to be smiling.
No. Or die from Joker toxin.
Either.
It's been really sad. So yeah, the shark goes into the open water. Joker tries to escape, but Batman finds him and corners him on the roof. And as we all know, Joker never a good fight with Batman. Like, usually Batman just like punches him once and Joker's like, oh, I give up, you know, or take me back to Arkham.
Yeah.
But Joker does try to fight him. He like finds a wrench and plays dirty and punches Batman with a wrench, and then tries to run away and ends up jumping off the roof. He inflates a little, like, you know, the little floaties that kids wear around their waist. But we forgot about the shark that's also in the open water and jumps directly into the path of the open mouth of the shark.
So Batman, of course, must save him.
No, Batman watches.
Oh, cool. Good. That's what we want, Bruce.
Yeah. And yeah, so it looks like Joker gets eaten by the shark.
I'm not sure he did, but
yeah, it doesn't look like it. Harley starts crying. She's like, my pudding is gone, and like throws a Joker card that she's kissed into the water, which also gets eaten by the shark.
Cool.
So it's a pretty dark ending to this episode. Bullock's trying to console Harley as she's crying, and Batman's just like, that's probably not the last we'll see of Joker.
Probably not.
But it is a really fun episode. You know, a lot of good characters. Obviously, Harley and Joker play off of each other really well, even though it's destructive and psychotic. Batman always, you know, solving the case around Joker.
Batman rides a shark.
And rides a shark.
You don't need to hear anymore.
I was hoping he would use some shark repellent, but the handcuffs were good enough, I guess.
Yeah, that would have been good. Good homage.
Yeah. I went through that one really fast, but I just had to throw a Bruce Tim and Deanie one in there just because it's so much fun.
Totally.
And using the Marshall Rogers Joker fish, you just got to get that in there.
Yeah. Definitely. Right. And we didn't have a Joker one. So
no, we didn't have a Joker one. And, you know, Mark Hamill and Conroy were so close too. They're like really, really good friends. So, and they played off each other so well. And you can just tell in these episodes, all the Joker episodes, how close they were. I also recommend the Christmas with the Joker is really good.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was that song was sang many a time.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was a real version of the song, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Batman smells Robin laid an egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so our last episode we're gonna talk about is Perchance to Dream, which was Kevin Conroy's favorite episode.
Yeah.
He said of the show, because we talked about his Shakespearean influences, you know, how he started, and it does make a lot of sense understanding that about him, that he was drawn to the like real tragic, you know, emotional turmoil mm-hmm. of the character of Batman.
Right.
That was his favorite stuff to act, and that's where he felt the most
like connected. You know, honest.
Yeah, connected. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's from his training or life experience or whatever, but that's what he liked to do. And in this one,
now this is written by, sorry, real quick, Lauren Bright and Michael Reeves, and directed by Bob Kirkland.
So Kevin Conroy actually spoke about this episode, and I have a brief quote about it. I got to create Thomas Wayne's voice, which is a really fun challenge, in addition to bringing the episode's incredible story to life. The wonderful thing about playing a character like Bruce Wayne is that you get to explore his damaged psychology. I love the scripts that examine his internal makeup. Perchance to Dream and the movie Mask of the Phantasm, they really dig into this man and what led him to become Batman. That's why this is his favorite episode.
Nice. All right. So this one starts out with Batman entering a building through a rooftop. When he jumps down onto the scaffolding, some sort of like sparkling electricity clouds his face and he just seems to pass out.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is Bruce Wayne waking up in a bed on a seemingly normal day. He doesn't know how he's returned to the manor, and Alfred is there just like, you know, doing his daily routine as Bruce wakes up. He's just like, Alfred, how did I get home last night? And I was like, I don't know, sir. Like, where, you know, seems like a normal night. Where were you? Like, who were you out with? And he's just like, wait, what? Like, everything is just a little confusing.
It's a little off.
A little off. And, you know, Bruce is like looking around and he's like, Alfred's like, oh, were you out with Selina last night? And Bruce is like, no, I was out at the doing bat things. And Alfred's like, what? Like, and so everything's off. And they're talking about like different women, or Alfred's talking about different women he might have been with, and and so Bruce is like, wait, what?
And he goes to the clock, right?
Yeah, he goes, yeah. So he gets up and he's looking around, and he goes to the clock and he's like trying to open it, and he's like, Alfred, this won't open. And he's like, what do you mean it won't open? He's like, to the cave. And he's like, what cave? Alfred, the bat
sir?
The cave, sir? Yeah, he's like, the bat cave, Alfred, the bat cave. And he's like, bat cave, sir, are you feeling all right?
Yeah, he's a little scared, I think.
Yeah,
a little off. And then while he's kind of starting to begin his like little, I guess, freak out, right, we hear Thomas Wayne in the doorway. Mm-hmm. He's like, Bruce, is everything all right?
Yeah,
what? What is this?
Right,
this isn't right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, both of his parents, and then his mom is also there. Both of both of his parents come through the door, and yeah, it's just Bruce is beside himself. Both of his parents are alive, and it's pretty confusing at this point.
Yeah, he's engaged to be married to Miss Selina Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're going to be wed next week. And his parents are gonna go play golf, like the Wayne Enterprises is, you know, supposedly led by him, but mostly Lucius Fox. It's a whole nother world and something
in this reality he's very much just Playboy Bruce Wayne, right, where he is being taken care of basically at every turn in his life, and it's like, you never really think about that, but that is the reality that he would have been looking at. Why would he become anything? You know, he's a rich boy.
Yeah.
And he would have stayed rich. He would have had his parents no reason to be in turmoil and agony and seeking, you know, vengeance, all of these things. Without that, what is Bruce Wayne? You know, that's, so it's almost like a cautionary tale for himself.
Yeah. Ends up back at his, at the office. He's like, you know, he's like, all right, I guess I'm going to go to the office. So very confused. He goes to the office and Selina Kyle comes in and she's talking about the wedding next week and all of this crazy stuff. And as they're talking for a minute, suddenly he sees Batman swinging through the air out the window. And he's about to stop some criminals who are robbing a jewelry store. And Batman again freaks out and he's like, what? What's happening? And he runs downstairs. Selina's like, oh, no, Bruce. Like, oh.
Yeah.
And he asks, like, who is that? She's like, that's, it's Batman. Who's Batman?
Yeah. And they watch him apprehend someone. He showed up a couple weeks ago. Blah, blah, blah. And he's just really taken aback. He's like, have you ever heard of Catwoman? Yeah. And she's like, are you okay?
Yeah. She's like, what's going on, Bruce?
He knows it's not right. He says, this isn't right.
Yeah. So he goes and sees trusted Dr. Leslie Tompkins. We've seen her in a previous episode.
Yeah.
And I wanted to mention, so Dr. Leslie Tompkins was first created in Detective Comics 457 by Denny O'Neill and Dick Giorgiano. So she's been in a lot of comics. She was also kind of like Alfred, just like another parent figure as well to him. So this is why he like really trusts her. That's why I wanted to mention that.
And they really keep her. I mean, she's a big focus in this animated series more than almost any other media. Like I think I've seen her pop up and stuff, but like she's definitely like in this show as one of the very, very, very few people who know his secret identity.
His secret, yeah.
It's Alfred, it's Robin, Batgirl, and her, really. And then occasionally some villains or whoever figure it out along the way, but that's really like the core of and Lucius.
Yeah, probably
Ra's al Ghul. Maybe Lucius, though. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, I think Lucius knows on. I mean, a little bit later, maybe. I can't even remember. Now I'm going to start mixing up my medias. But yeah.
Yeah. It's not that many. And she's definitely a huge part in this show. She pops up a lot. There's episodes focused on her.
Yeah, there is. Mm-hmm. So she tells him that he's been disassociating all of these years and just making up this other life, basically. To like deal with all of his problems, which
came from things being handed to him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Instead of everything being taken away.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just flipped right the other way around. Just like she says that and the other way around.
I really, Batman. With this episode, I really thought of the Alan Moore written Superman. Mm-hmm. I think it's an annual where it's his birthday.
Right.
And he has that like, it's like a form of mind control that Mongol puts on his chest or gives him as a gift. And it's like this black orchid flower or something like that. And it shows you your true desires. And in Superman's, it's not that he has the idyllic life on Krypton. It's like he has all the problems that like he can't connect with his kids. He fights with his wife. He has a boring job. He has a hard time connecting with his father, right? All these things, but it's like showing that this guy more than anything wants, that's his dream. It's his dream isn't ideal. His dream is to be truly normal.
Yeah.
Warts and all, mundanity and all.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is also sort of exactly what Bruce wants.
Right.
He doesn't want it because he'd be a rich playboy. He wants it because he'd be kind of a loser. Like Bruce Wayne would be lame, you know? But it's like that's what it's better. You know? Yeah,
it's because Lisa's parents would be there and he would still have a wife and just a life.
Semi-normal life. Semi-normal life.
Yeah. Just happens to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bruce believes her and feels that finally, he says, his nightmare is over. Oh, I'm sorry. I said he's completely jubilant. And he's so excited. He's like, oh, finally, my life. I can celebrate my life. And he goes to his parents or to his father and asks him to go to the opera with him and Selina. They're going to celebrate opera style, rich people style.
Yeah.
Yes, Alfred to lay out his best suit.
Yeah, he chums it up with Alfred.
Yeah.
all of it very strange. When he's acting like this, it's like more disturbing than anything.
Yeah. He even like he brings up his voice. This is actually a really good example. Kevin Conroy brings up his voice like an octave.
Yeah.
Like, it's very different.
And it changes the whole thing. And he's like, did you find that bat cave there? And like, no, sir. And he's like, good thing, because then we'd both be crazy.
Exactly. That's where you really like, hear it is when he says that. Yeah.
It's very off, though. It's off-putting because we're not used to this guy.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he's showing the range there. We've seen in this episode alone, him doing Thomas Wayne, depressed Batman, normal Batman, Bruce.
Yeah.
Jubilant Bruce.
Yes.
There's like multiple versions, you know.
So many versions of his voice. So then he picks up the newspaper. And I say newspaper this time. I don't say Gotham Times because when he opens it, it's literally just a jumbled mess. So we get our biggest clue to what is going on. And that's because when you dream, you can't read words.
Yeah, you can't read in a dream.
No.
And he tears books off the walls. He's opening them up. Yeah. And he's just, you know, distraught, throws his head, you know, drops to his knees again. And his parents run in. What's wrong? What's wrong? And he's like, you're not real. You're not real.
Yep. He starts tossing things. He sees Batman on the TV and he's like, it's Batman. It's all because of Batman. And he like throws something at the TV and breaks the TV. Then he goes on like a rampage and he goes out to like a gun store, purchases flare guns and like grappling hooks and starts evading cops and completely goes insane.
Your parents are some cops show up where he's parked illegally or something.
Yeah.
real fast. And then like he gives him his ID and they're like, your parents are real worried about you. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
When a billionaire is looking for their billionaire kid.
Yeah.
They find him real fast.
They find him real quick. Yeah.
real quick. But yeah, he escapes with his flare gun and
his grappling hook. Yeah. On his shoulder. And they're like, that guy moves just like Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. They give chase through the alleys and he like leaps over the fence and all that stuff. And they have climb it.
Right. So he can still move just like Batman in this dream. Like, so maybe he's like starting to remember that he is Batman or he's always been Batman. Right.
Yeah.
Even though it's a dream. Or we're starting to figure out that it's a dream. So yeah, he heads towards, I guess, Arkham-ish. Like, I don't know, all the words are jumbled, but it looks like the gates of Arkham.
Yeah.
To
a clock tower.
Yeah, to a clock tower of like a church or something. And yeah, climbs all the way up there and he's just like, I'm here, like come and face me. Right.
Yeah.
With the Batman in the air.
So it's raining, they're on a clock tower. Bruce Wayne's there, then Batman shows up and it's Bruce Wayne and Batman and they get into like a major throwdown and they're yelling at each other. So it's like Kevin Conroy doing both versions, which it's like, it's one thing to be like, I have a speaking voice for this person and a speaking voice for this person, but he's got a yelling voice for Batman and the yelling voice for Bruce.
Exactly.
So it's just like all over the place and it's different, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got such a good tone for both of them. Like, and that's the other thing that I wanted to mention about his Batman voice that he created. It's so like if you look at like Christian Bale or, you know, he has that like very deep Batman voice, right?
Yeah, it's or, silly. It's
like, it's almost to the point that's silly, which is why I actually like Robert Pattinson's a little bit better because he goes a little bit higher, right? Like
he's like whispering, right?
He's whispery though. Yeah, which I think is better than the deep voice.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
And I mean, Christian Bale talked about it. It's like that guy's such a method type actor. He's not full method, but like he's so embodied. He couldn't, it seems like in a way he's not a good choice for Batman because the actor talked about it. He's like, I couldn't imagine dressing up like the bat. And then I'm like, well, then why are you fucking
why are
Batman?
You Batman?
But
yeah.
His the reason he got the way he got to that voice, I remember I read this a while ago. He's like, he had to be a monster.
Right.
So it's like Christian Bale, how he sees Batman is like the monster. Maybe it's the truth or not, but it's a monster to him. That's why he's where are the rabbits? Like
You're like, shit. No.
And then it's like, what? Ben Affleck just has a speaker or something.
So right? stupid.
But and then I mean, even Michael Keaton, it's a little different. I think his is more subtle, which is interesting given that like, movie's yeah. not subtle, but his yeah. performance is it is a different voice, but it's a subtle change.
Yeah, it's and it might be a little bit too subtle sometimes, like, you know, yeah. you can kind of figure it out probably a little bit easier. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, Kevin Conroy is just, it's theatrical, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it and then his Bruce Wayne voice is actually more of a put on than his Batman voice.
Yeah.
Which is what I really love. He's got that like Playboy charm, which is exactly what Bruce Wayne should have.
And it's fake.
It's fake. Yeah.
Which is Batman too.
Right.
It too would be fake for right. Batman.
Yeah. But they even say his Batman voice is the real voice. That's his yeah. true voice because that's where all his pain and, you know, comes from.
Yeah. Which so it's even a different voice than when Bruce is at the Batcave talking to Alfred.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Not in this episode, but in a normal episode when he is, it's a different Bruce, but it's still not Batman. It's all insane. And how yeah. complex this yeah. guy, it's like bringing this, you know?
Yeah. So when they battle it out, and then finally he unmasks the fake Batman, and it turns out to be none other than the Mad Hatter.
Yes.
And the Mad Hatter has basically created this dream world yeah. for Batman. And he can like live out his best fantasy life in it.
Yeah, he asked him how he figured it out. And he mm-hmm. said, reading.
Right.
Reading is a function of the right side of the brain. Mm-hmm. Dreams are a function of the left. It's impossible to read in a dream.
Yeah. Which like, I already knew that, but whatever. Little kids, though, aren't going to know that again.
No.
Like at all. They're not going to like see him reading the book and be like, or the newspaper and be like, why is that? You know, maybe yeah. they would think it's the Riddler. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm thinking when I was a kid, I don't remember when I first saw this episode, but I'm guessing that that's probably what I thought when I was a kid, that it was the Riddler.
Yeah.
With
all the weird characters and stuff, yeah. he's always doing stuff like that. So, which yeah. might even be an intentional misdirect.
Probably. Yeah, I would think. But from what I know now of dreams, I was watching yes. it and I was like, oh, it's a dream, you know?
Then it could be Scarecrow. It could be. Yeah.
Yes.
Narrows it down, but still not finalized.
Yeah. And I don't think I would have ever thought it was the Mad Hatter originally. No. But then it makes so much sense. And he even talks about Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. And it's pretty deep when he goes into the dreams. He even talks about like, yeah, Tweedledee and Tweedledum and the Looking Glass. And has that really great speech about that.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
But he's able to break out of the dream by mm-hmm. they don't show him going off the balcony. I noticed yeah. that because that's but he,
it's
he
pretty
jumps.
Dark. Yeah,
he does jump. So you get like you see the Mad Hatter like, no. And then you see Bruce falling.
Right.
And then Batman wakes up and he has a little like metal, you know, classic movie brain control device on his head.
Right. Yeah. Because he figures out that you can't die in a dream. Maybe. Yeah.
But they always make you wake up. So
they always make you wake up. Yeah. When you when you're falling and then you suddenly wake up. Right. Which is and a really scary experience, too.
Yeah. He whoops the goons real fast. Mm-hmm. And he's yeah. like, why? Because he's so mad. I mean, yeah. this one's one of the few times where he's like, fists are balled up and you can tell it's taken everything to not just strangle this guy. Because mm-hmm. worse than his parents being dead is being tormented and thinking that they're alive, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And anyone who's had a dreamlike version of reality and then you wake up, it's never you're never glad you had that dream, I don't think.
No. No. Yeah, because yeah, it's so disheartening. And then yeah, to feel that rage again when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
But then he realizes that, you know, his nemesis was willing to give him paradise, basically, if it meant, you know, leaving him to or leaving him free to pursue his dreams, basically.
He's like, I'll give you paradise.
Yeah.
Just to keep you out of my life.
Right. Exactly. Which is, yeah. I don't know, not the worst thing anybody's done to Batman, but.
But I mean, he's probably the most mad about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. But, you know, again, he gives him, he just ends up taking him to Arkham, I'm sure, and throwing him back in.
And
just like everybody else.
Another line of PTSD on Batman's chart.
Oh, yep. Got a lot of that.
Yeah.
He's so angry. But a great episode for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Really does show the range of the great actor. I mean, it's just a great episode in general, too. But definitely shows off Kevin's abilities.
Yeah, I think, for all of them that we've watched, that's probably one of the best for sure.
Yeah. I'll throw out another one that I just watched. I didn't take any notes, really, but the Nothing to Fear episode. It's a Scarecrow episode. And that's where the iconic line, "I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman." Like, it all came from there. And it's like, they keep that stuff around, right?
Oh, yeah.
They call him Vengeance. They make a joke about it in the Pattinson movies, right? Because it's like, why are you walking around saying, "I am Vengeance"? It's like, so your name's Vengeance?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's still around. That line is still there, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and "I am the night," that's been around forever. I mean, they took so much from this show. Yeah, and it will be around forever now. It's part of history.
Totally.
I think they will keep taking from it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of the best versions of a lot of these stories. You know, the best Mr. Freeze story is that episode with Mr. Freeze.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's better than any Mr. Freeze comic.
Yeah, it was definitely disheartening when they tried to use that in Batman and Robin, and they took from that.
They definitely did, right? Which is,
they did, absolutely.
On one level is huge, right? Because a big giant movie is taking this little cartoon to adapt the elements. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't done right. I mean,
it was not.
The fact that they were pulling from this show, and not a old show either, a recent show.
Yeah.
Shows the quality of this. Also, like, I didn't write any numbers down, but like, the view numbers on these shows were crazy. I mean, it's like over a third of the country was watching every episode. Yeah. Like, or over a third of all TVs.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? No.
Crazy. What? Gigantic numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if you want to follow up on any of these two, I mean, obviously we talked about Mask of the Phantasm. Watch that.
Definitely, and that's a lot of the character just work going on. I mean, it's he's not Batman, a lot of it. It's a lot of backstory. It's about Bruce's, like, how he almost got married, how he was going to pull away from the path of the Bat, and what happened, and what kept him, and really, like, enforced that as his journey, that he must become the Bat. But
right.
Fantastic movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we know they'll keep making more animated Batman cartoons, but we'll just have a different voice now.
Yeah.
I know Jensen Ackles has played Batman recently, and he does a really good job, too. But there'll definitely be no one like Kevin Conroy.
No. Not again. And yes, luckily there are hundreds of episodes.
Yeah.
And we said there wasn't a bad Batman episode. I don't think there's a bad Superman episode. I don't think there's a bad Justice League episode. I don't think there's a bad Batman Beyond episode. And he's in a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
So just watch the whole thing. Watch the whole universe.
Definitely.
You don't need a new show.
No. Well, I think they are doing that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think let's call it there.
Yeah. But thanks for listening, everybody. And
Hope you've enjoyed it.
Rest in peace, Kevin Conroy. You know, my heart goes out to the people who actually knew him. You know, it's hard enough to be me, who's just a fan and grew up with him, but you know, people actually had that guy in their lives. So
absolutely. I hope there's a big bat cave in the sky for you. Absolutely.
But also, I think very quickly since his passing, it's shown how
huge a fan base or influence.
Even people who aren't about this stuff. It's just like, oh, RIP to my Batman. You know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, what more can a person ask to touch, you know, millions of lives like that? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm sure he would be completely, just blown away by the support and love. So, yeah.
He just wants to do the voice one more time, though.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure you follow us at Escapist Comics on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. And go to the store, 3090 Claremont Avenue in Berkeley. Follow me at Jessa Baldoni on Instagram and Facebook, I guess you want. Not Twitter. I'm off Twitter. No more.
Okay. Yeah.
And Robert.
You can follow me on Instagram predominantly at Robert_NEGOESCO at Robert Negoesco. Search that name on YouTube. You can follow me there. Those are really the two main spots to find me. I have comics out. So grab a comic, only $4 for each one. Pick up some issues.
Yeah, I guess. Woo! All right, and remember, everyone,
escape into comics
or Batman the Animated Series this week. Do that too.
I am the knight.
All right, thanks everyone. Have a good rest of the week.
All right, bye bye.